Magical Mara Designs is proud to sponsor this episode of the Dub D Dub Review podcast. Whether you are looking for cute, comfortable mini ears or Disney-inspired face masks, we've got you covered at MagicalMaraDesigns.com.
Welcome to the Dub D Dub Review. I'm your host, Chris Malik, and I'm joined by two guest co-hosts today and two of my great friends, Tim Vanswoll and Scott Ferrioli. Gentlemen, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Guys, it's great to see you this morning. Thank you for indulging me and getting up before work to have this very intelligent discussion, you know, so I appreciate it. Before we get into the show today, well, let's talk about what the show is going to be first off, because we haven't talked about this much, and it's surprising because it's, as a big dork that I am, I'm fully admitting it, it's become like my go-to TV preference. I don't know about you guys, but we're going to talk about Marvel today. So, in terms of like your TV watching, dudes, where does it fit? Is it like your go-to relaxation in the background? I know, Tim, you're a Star Wars guy. Scott, you're a Christmas movie guy. Where does Marvel movies fit in terms of that stuff?
I do watch a lot of Star Wars, but I think Marvel is almost equal to it. It just, at different times, I may watch more Marvel and more Star Wars to get in modes, but I think they're almost equal in preference in my family.
Wow.
Yep. I'm the same way. We get different modes, and you know, I'll get a Marvel kick, and I'll watch four or five different movies. But right now, I haven't watched any of them in a while. But again, I work from home, so a lot of times I'll just have stuff on the background, and I've seen the movies several times, so it's comfortable to have that in the background. So it's, you know, you don't have to concentrate on it, but you know what's happening, and you still enjoy it.
For sure. So I've got a problem recently. We've taken our trips to Florida and back in the truck, and you know, I'll connect it. And we'll play it in the car. I obviously can't see it, but I'll hear it. And the Marvel movie volume is unique, where the actual verbiage is about one level, and then the action comes through, and it's about five times as loud. So I'm constantly adjusting the volume because the speakers in my truck are like right at head level. But it's almost a guarantee that if we make our trip to Florida, of the five movies that maybe watch in the truck, and that's like a conservative number, like three of them are Marvel movies. So we have hit up, cripes, 10, 12 movies in the last 2 weeks alone, just because we've been to Florida so much recently. And you know what? You're right. In the background, just by listening to it, it's like driving comfort food just to hear it in the background. You hear the sounds. You hear even random characters, the random, you know, Captain America line or the random villain line. It's like, oh, that makes me happy, you know, just as you're going down the expressway. So I get it.
And having it in the background, sometimes you pick up things that you wouldn't otherwise, because you're not distracted by all the blowing up and the extra stuff. You're like, oh, that person said something there.
Yes. We've caught so many tie-ins that would lead to the next phase that you would have never paid attention to. And, yeah, you know, that's actually not the show today, but there have been so many hints that we're like, oh, man, that's great. I wish I would have heard that the first time. So, exactly. We're going to talk about Marvel villains today specifically, because actually Jeremy Murray made a good line. And this is through a direct message string. And he said, you know, a lot of movies are only as good as the villain that's in them. And it's true. You have to believe that the villain is realistic and has a realistic chance of succeeding. So I agree with that. When you think of all the great movies you've ever watched, there's always been, an antagonist. There's always been a protagonist. You got to figure out who is actually trying to go and subvert the plans. It's true. Is it the family? And of course, the Fratellis in Goonies. They're great, you know? And do you really believe it's going to happen? It's a possibility, you know? So in Marvel, it's the same exact thing. But before we get to that, tell me something really cool that's going on in your life right now. We always start this way, boys. So Tim, Scott, give me something good that's going on right now in your life.
I'll let you go, Tim.
I don't know, it's kind of a nerdy teacher thing, but I got really excited. We've been live and in person teaching most of my students throughout the entire year. We were lucky to go 14 weeks without having to go full remote learning in our school district. So, but we're now fully remote from Thanksgiving up until about 2 weeks after Christmas. So I'm like, what are we going to do to make this interesting? And I was really proud of an idea I came up with. We're doing historical research on a historical person, but instead of doing a boring report, I'm having the kids take the role of a elf on the shelf. Like they're watching this historical person in history in their life, and then they're having to do video reports back to Santa. And since they're at home, they can put costumes on and they can, you know, kind of dress themselves up and pose themselves in weird places and have fun with it. So I don't know. It really brought a lot of joy to me because it's been kind of a stagnant year in school, and to have a spark of inspiration that played out, it was like, yes, this is good.
That's awesome. Scott, just so you know, last week, Tim had all of his kids do a report on Marvel villains. Just all right, kids, I need a full analysis here of every Marvel villain. So
I need a little more headway or advance notice so I can start doing that stuff.
So just to confirm, he's been doing the Marvel villain stuff, and you've been watching all of the movies in the car for the past, you know, couple weeks back and forth.
Yes.
So you guys are really prepared for this, and I'm the one who's getting blindsided.
Oh, so we're going to go and qualify that in a second, but share with us good. Give me something really good in your life, buddy.
Well, Tim's stuff was better than mine. Everything's kind of like business as usual here. The one thing that's been, I'll say, entertaining me and keeping me a little bit preoccupied recently is just I've been looking at possibly getting a rental property for down here as well. So I've been doing a lot of research on that and checking out some different places and working on possibilities for what we're going to do with the website and things like that. So that's a lot of times when I'm working out, that's what's kind of like running around in my background, is just trying to figure out different things and run numbers and stuff like that. So that's been exciting, nerve-wracking, and keeping me occupied as well.
We've talked about that off the air, you know, and whatnot. So yeah, it is. It's like the thrill of the pursuit. And then when you finally find the one, then like the rubber hits the road and you're like, oh man, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to get involved here? But yeah, I get it completely. Yep. Let's talk more about that though. Close by Walt Disney World, close by your home, in a different location in the Vero area. Where are you thinking?
Out near Disney World, probably closer to like Animal Kingdom area.
Gotcha.
There's a couple of other places we were looking at. One was a condo that I think is not going to work out. And I think I'm back to single family homes again. I think I have some stuff narrowed down, but it's just trying to figure out everything. Will this work? How are we going to do this? And just trying to get it all together and going.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out if now is the time to be buying either, you know, because I'm going, you know, there could be foreclosures coming up in the next several months. And a lot of people are saying that the market's hot right now. So I'm trying to figure out, should I be buying? Should I be waiting? I have no idea.
Scott, you and I have talked about this at length a few months ago for me. And like, I think we all came to the conclusion, like, it's never going to be a great time, but it's always going to be a great time, but it's never going to be just right. And you eventually just put your head down and run through the wall and hope that it all works out at the end, you know? So
yep.
Awesome. Okay. Let's start off with this before the show starts. We're going to say this. We are all Marvel heavy-duty fans, but we're not Uber fans, so we've not read all the comics, and we're not up to date on the Marvel site. So we take a closer than 10,000-foot view, but it's, you know, we're not superficial in the sense that we've seen the movies once. We've seen all the movies several times. But have we watched every Netflix series, Agent Carter and whatnot? Probably not, you know, but so we're good fans. We're not uber-duber fans, so let's just get that out there. So if you're listening and you are a real, real hardcore Marvel fan, and
don't
get something, yeah, don't come back to us because we're just trying right now. But I'll say it struck a chord in all of us. And when I proposed this show, you know, the crazy thought in my mind, I got three middle-aged guys talking about Marvel in the morning. It's like the middle-aged version of the movie Stand By Me right now, you know, talking about Marvel here. So, awesome. Anyways. we wanted to break this down into a few different categories. So the first thing we want to do is actually define what we think a good Marvel villain or a good villain is. But it's easy to say, oh, rank your top 10 villains. But what are like the qualifications for that? So we actually have categories here. And the one that I propose to these gentlemen is the Marvel villain who should have succeeded with their plan, the Marvel villain who is most sympathetic, and then just plain the worst villain. And I left those open for interpretation. So if you told me the worst villain was Loki, if you told me the worst villain was, who knows, it could be anybody, I want to hear your reasons why. So before we start, though, what in your mind makes a good villain? Like, tell me, like, what's the quota for a good villain in a movie? Scott, you go first, buddy.
I never really had thought of it before until really doing this list. And I think a lot of what makes a really good villain is a good backstory and something that you can relate to them with. Like you had mentioned previously, like we can't use Thanos in this. And I think Thanos was an amazing villain because there were so many layers to him and the backstory. And, you know, he's doing something bad, but in his mind, it's for the right reason. So I think just having like being able to get in their mind and see where they're really coming from. Instead of just like, you know, he's a bad guy. He's doing it for bad reasons. He wants money. You know, you want to have a villain who you actually can like relate to as well.
So I agree with it. That's a great description. Yeah. And we should say that before even Tim goes. I did say let's exclude Thanos because he's the overarching villain. He appears in the post credits for a lot of these. And he's the one pulling the strings. So it's very easy to say that one who should have succeeded was Thanos. Maybe that's a different show. Top 10 reasons why Thanos should have succeeded. But anyways, Tim, what is your definition of a good villain?
I think when Scott said the word relatable, I think that's a real big key part of a good villain. Like they have to be somebody that you relate to. As I was, and kind of tying in Jeremy's comment that you mentioned a little bit ago, that, you know, for it to be a good movie, you need a good villain. And that definitely played out for me. Like my least favorite movies and the worst villains were, you know, they went hand in hand. If it's not a well-developed villain, the movie wasn't going to be as successful. So, you know, I really struggled with trying to define between bad guy and villain. And for me, there are a lot of bad guys in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but for them to be a villain, they had to kind of be like the puppet master, the one pulling all the strings, the one with the master plan, and that they had to, you know, have some sort of more sinister ultimate goal out of their actions. It wasn't just somebody that was behaving badly.
Gotcha. I've always considered a villain as a good villain as someone that I root for more than the main character. I want to see the evil plan succeed because I get the story and I get the pursuit. And it might be because emotionally I'm connected to it, but it might be because he's so powerful that I would just love to see the chaos reign supreme and see what happens. So he's either got to be incredibly overwhelmingly powerful, almost to the point where it's impossible to have him defeat, or I can really appreciate where he's coming from more so than I should just cheer against him, that I want to see him succeed. So anyways, let's start off here. We also stated that it should be one of the main bad guys, villain of the story. Every Marvel movie has multiple characters that are working against Captain America and working against the Avengers. So it has to be the main one, like the Chitauri, the complete army. They are qualified as the worst villains ever because they never win, you know? So, but there's no main character there. So to say that, it's who actually is the villain of the story. So we had to come up with the main villain. So let's start off here with this. Let's start off with the sympathetic villains. Okay. The ones that we think people can most relate to, or their backstory is like the one that we're like, that person, I get what their motivation is. So we did our top three. Let's go from our third to our first. Tim, who's your most or your least most sympathetic villain?
I think I'll go with Vulture.
Okay.
Adrian Toomes from Spider-Man Homecoming.
Okay.
He's just a guy that got into a bad business. He was, you know, an arms dealer that he did it because he was trying to take care of his family out of desperation and out of a need to be a good provider for his family. He got involved in this bad business, and it turned out he was really good at it, and he kind of stuck with it after the fact. But throughout the movie, you get to see the dad side of him, and it does what you need for a good villain. You struggle. Like, I like this guy. He even kind of showed some compassion to Spider-Man, to Peter in the movie. And you kind of wanted him to turn the corner. Like, I know he's a bad guy, but I hope he'll see the light in the end. I think I do that with all of my villains. Like, I'm always hoping that it's going to be a Darth Vader moment for any villain in any movie. Like, at the end, they're going to turn out to be good. And Vulture, I was rooting for him to be that guy. And I still don't know that he's not. You connected with him because he had that compassionate side that you saw as a dad that I can definitely relate to as a dad. Like, you do whatever you can for your family.
So we should probably say, behind each of these answers, are they still currently alive in the MCU? Because characters like that, there's further development. No one's truly ever dead unless they're dead. And even with Thanos and the snap, that's up for debate and objection as well, too. Because if you do read the comics or you do research, you'd understand they're not dead. So you have to understand whether they're dead or not. So in terms of your character, the Vulture, is he still alive in the MCU or is he not, Tim?
He's in prison as far as we know. Yes. So yes, he's still alive.
Still alive. Scott, how about you?
Well, I have just noticed that I am completely outmatched here.
No. Let's go with yours. It's okay, because me too.
Tim, after hearing Tim speak, I wanted to accidentally disconnect from this chat and just say, all right, I'm out.
No, because I'm the same way. I've got some superficial, and Tim's always prepared, so that's why I love him. So.
I see that, and I'm going, wow, I'm in trouble. Okay. for my number three, I put down Hela from Thor Ragnarok.
Ooh, good.
Why? Because essentially, she was doing everything that Odin wanted, her father wanted. And she kicked the crap out of everybody living because that's what her dad wanted. That's how she was raised. And then all of a sudden, her dad kind of turned the tables and wanted to be like a good guy and imprisoned her when she was just doing his bidding the whole time. And she mentions that, we were together fighting everybody. And then all of a sudden, he had like a change of heart. And now all of a sudden, she became the bad one. I mean, she was the one who was supposed to be the heir to the throne and inherit everything, essentially. And just out of nowhere, she was turned aside, imprisoned, and then now she wants revenge. So, I mean, I understand exactly where she's coming from. And I mean, it was kind of her rightful place, and she was doing what she was told to do. And then all of a sudden, she was made like the scapegoat.
You know what? I couldn't agree more. So much so that she wasn't my number three. She was my number two, but I'll say Hela as well, too. I agree with you. She was just told by her dad, and they were on marching orders. They coded planets in blood. And then you're right. Odin all of a sudden decided to become a benevolent king. And yeah, she was the scapegoat. It was completely unfair. And she has a just and right claim to that throne. She was the firstborn. So I completely get it. And also, there's something about, maybe it's just me, there's something about an evil female villain that when they ace that role, it's better than most of the guys that do that role, because you're already, as a viewer, you're already preordained to think the guy's going to be the villain. And when a female comes out and she's so aggressive and she's so good in the battle where she literally waylaid the entire army, oh my gosh, it's amazing. So, yeah, I'm going to say Hela as well. So,
yeah.
Tim, number two.
Okay, Eric Killmonger from Black Panther.
Okay.
This guy, he you see his dad, die early in the movie. And he's just waylaid by the situation. His father's been taken from him by his own people. And this poor kid's left. He already lives in a rough neighborhood, in a rough part of the country, and he's got everything stacked against him, because of his background and his environment, and you just can relate to that. And he's driven by grief, which I think throughout the MCU, that's one of the things as I was reflecting on this, like how much the most effective villains are driven by grief in some way. Mm-hmm. Like, grief is the most powerful driving force, and he was driven by that. And even as he lay dying, and Black Panther is showing him some compassion too. Like, he wanted to see the sunset on Wakanda, I still am laying there like, no, he's going to pull through. No, he's not going to die. Like he's going to have his Darth Vader moment. He's going to somehow heal. And then he's going to team up with Black Panther and they're going to change the world. Then it didn't happen, but because I wanted that to happen, I felt like he was very sympathetic.
Well, I'd argue that it may have happened because it forced Wakanda to change their foreign policy, you know? Yeah. So I would almost argue it did happen. It's a great choice. Michael B. Jordan there. Oh my gosh. And yeah. I will say that when you watch all the MCU movies, Black Panther is always in like a top three or top four. It is a phenomenal film. Phenomenal film. So agreed there. Scott, what do you think, buddy? What's number two?
Well, I had two down. I wasn't sure which one I was going to go with. And one of them was Killmonger. So that worked out perfectly. So great job explaining that. I had a lot more stuff written down for that one. But the other one I have down is Whiplash / Ivan Vanko.
Get out! You're stealing. Are you looking at my list, Ferioli? Tell me why.
No, I mean, again, it was one of those things that, again, he's just powered by the way his father was treated. You know, his father was with, oh, my God. Howard Stark. I almost said Tony Stark. He was with Howard Stark creating everything. And then, again, he was made, again, I'm going back to guys who just made the scapegoat with stuff, you know, where he's sitting there and he was involved with all the projects and then he gets deported and he gets shunned from the intellectual community. And sent. I'm not even 100% sure. He was sent back. He was imprisoned. He was imprisoned in Russia.
Yes,
right.
He was deported and imprisoned. Correct.
And you know, it's just Ivan Vanko. I mean, he's not a super strong villain, but he's one of the ones that I just could be sympathetic with, just for the fact that he's doing it because he's trying to avenge his father, and his father was treated poorly, and Howard Stark got all of the attention and all the fame and all the money, and they were left with a really horrible life, you know. It seemed like no money, you know, just poor, no money. Father's probably was a little like rough on Ivan Vanko, got a little crazy at the end. So I mean, it was just, again, he's just fueled by the way his father was treated and wants to get revenge on the Starks.
Okay, so Scott, I'm going to agree again with you. He was my number three, actually. Was Ivan Vanko. Whiplash, Mickey Rourke. And I love Mickey Rourke in movies too. I mean, he's got just the right amount of like crazy. Is he really like, is he acting? Is he not? And side note, if you ever saw him in the movie The Wrestler, oh my God, The Wrestler is a phenomenal movie. But when you look at Whiplash's fingers and they're black and the dirt and grime, and you realize, yeah, the story was he wanted to benefit. His father wanted to benefit off the arc reactor and was a project lead with Howard Stark. And Howard realized that, didn't want to sell it for commercial purposes, deported, yada, yada. And meanwhile, the Vankos are living now in a gulag in Russia. And they grow up. They're so filthy. They're so dirty. Yeah. I mean, you think about your own personal relationships with your dad. Someone offends your dad like that, even as normal people, like, I guarantee you that sits with you forever. You know what I mean? Someone, you know, unjustly, you know, takes your father's pride and whatnot away, for sure. So he's often thought of as one of the weaker villains. I love watching him. People say, oh, Mickey Rourke appeared and he just wanted a paycheck in that movie. I know it's a cheesy Russian accent. He is phenomenal. Like, in terms of believability, that crazy dude could be walking down the street right now, you know? So, like, some of these characters are made from celestial space beings and have these, you know, these powers. This guy is just fueled by, like, crazy knowledge and hatred, you know? And I love it. I would love to see more. And not to mention, you know, I mean, the intelligence level to be able to go reprogram all these droids and drones and whatnot. Oh man, exactly. I agree with you 100%. Tim, number one.
Winter Soldier.
Okay.
I think Winter Soldier is a simple number one for me because ultimately he really wasn't to blame for anything. He really truly wasn't. Like, Cap got rescued. He got captured. He gets brainwashed. And is made to do all of these horrible things that he had no consciousness of doing, and yet he's this terrible villain. He ends up being hunted down by, you know, hated by Iron Man and just hunted down by everybody in the world. And ultimately, like, he really wasn't responsible for anything. And it just I wanted him to succeed. It felt like everything was so unfair for him to be going through everything he had to go through.
Gotcha. Scott, how about that?
No, that was a great one. I agree completely. Bucky, again, not it wasn't my number one pick. Bucky, Winter Soldier, absolutely fantastic pick by Tim. My number one is Loki.
Okay.
Because I absolutely – I don't know if that's the cheesy way out, because everybody's seen – you love Loki. You love Loki's personality. You relate to him. You know it's because, you know, he was taken from the Frost Giants. He really should be possibly heir to the throne, but he's not. He feels like he was mistreated by his family. And his personality, I think, just adds a lot to it. I mean, it's really hard to find a villain who's got more personality than Loki, with one-liners and the facial expressions. And I mean, doing jokes towards the end. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's bad. He's a good guy. He'll stab you in the back all of a sudden. You don't know where he is, but it's just his personality makes you really relate to him. And he's an absolutely fantastic villain.
Tom Hiddleston's a great actor, isn't he? So
absolutely.
I debated, though. I'm going to be honest. I debated that he should appear as a sympathetic villain. I debated, actually, and this is a fear, that he should be in the worst villain list. But I love watching Loki as well, too.
Yeah.
You know, whenever he's on the screen, I always feel like I'm going to get quality, like, time on the screen. It's not going to be just fill, you know, for, like, a character. Yeah. So, I debated here for a little bit of time here. I had Ghost initially as my number one sympathetic villain from Ant-Man and the Wasp because she really did nothing and she was phasing in and out and all she wanted to do was stop the pain in her life. But, you know, Tim was right. I don't know if she actually did any villainous act other than trying to protect herself, you know, and whatnot and trying to fix herself. I think the most sympathetic villain is a guy who rarely appears on screen, and that's Helmut Zemo. Because in his moment before Black Panther stops him from shooting himself in the head at the end of Civil War, the fuel for his actions were essentially his family was massacred in Avengers 2. His family died at the hands of the Avengers. And there's no other motivating factor than that. We're talking about how a father died penniless. At least Whiplash had a life with his father at some point. His life was removed completely at the hands of people that were doing something benevolent and good. Yeah, I could see how that would absolutely drive a person insane. He had no superpowers. All he had was intelligence and revenge. And he only had to utter, I don't know, 10 words to get the entire Avengers crew to feud and almost self-destruct. So I view him as the most sympathetic villain.
That's a great pick.
He appears later on a list for me as well too. So, and Daniel Brühl still is alive at this point, as the actual character. So, but he's still alive.
He was definitely in my honorable mention list as well as Loki. So,
gotcha.
Both of those guys.
Let's go to our worst villains. So let's go to our El Stinko, the guys that we thought really just didn't, it wasn't either fleshed out. Now here's a discussion. So one of my favorite characters is the big Cull Obsidian. He's Thanos's big heavy hitter, the big guy with the retractable axe pick. But you know, I qualify him as one of the worst villains. He's not even a main character because he has no storyline, but yet when you watch him on the screen, I always think he's gonna just tear something apart. But yeah, I mean, he might be one of the worst villains, but yet he doesn't even qualify. But worse could be anything. It could be weakest story. It could be weakest abilities. It could be most easily dispatched. So, Scott, what's your worst villain? What's number three?
Number three, I'd have to probably say, look at my list now, the Mandarin from Iron Man 3.
Okay.
Because it's hard to tell because you go, they build him up as the villain the whole time.
Okay.
And I mean, he's just not, you know, I heard in the comic books, I mean, he was a much bigger, I read about this, he was a much bigger character, much stronger. And the whole thing with the Mandarin is that, you know, he's the puppet. He's just a drug addicted, alcohol addicted actor who's pretending to be this horrible terrorist tormenting the world. And then you find out afterwards, it's only, and every time there's a mistake made that causes an explosion, causes a problem, they pin the Mandarin on it. And he's just, everything that he stood for and that he was taking credit for was fake, and he was fake as well. So I was waiting for this Mandarin with the voice. I mean, the actor did a fantastic job, but you're watching Iron Man 3 and you're just waiting for this bad A, you know, villain, the Mandarin, to find out, we'll finally meet the Mandarin, and then they pull it out from you a little bit, which is perfectly fine. That's a nice twist in the movie. But for villain itself, you're like, I just wanted more. I wanted something really, really cool there. And you're like, oh, it was fake the whole time? Damn.
Well, Trevor Slattery is the name of the actor that Ben Kingsley plays. Mm-hmm. And you know, so a little bit behind the scenes. So if you research it, people talk about Ben Kingsley in either one of two ways. Either they love working with him or they absolutely hate working with Ben Kingsley. But in this particular role, he was perfect. Like the crazy, like on the screen, like acid drug addict, you know. But I'm going to pause you there for a second, though, with the Mandarin, because the Mandarin is a heavy hitter in the MCU, like headliner. So
that's what I had read. I didn't know anything about it. And I read that he was like this big guy. And I was like, okay. I was like, and when they put it online, I mean, for me, he's on the bottom list here for people who are really into MCU in the comics. I have to imagine they would have been much more disappointed waiting for this Mandarin. You're like, you're kidding me. That's what you just did to me.
Well, that's the entry. So just wait, though. There's more movies coming, and I'm guaranteeing you'll see more of the Mandarin coming out. You know the first time you actually see the Ten Rings, the Terrorist Circle? Can you remember the first time it appeared in an MCU movie? If you don't, I wouldn't doubt it. Do you remember?
Nope.
In the original Iron Man. When they have Tony Stark speaking in the original Iron Man, when they're interrogating him, on the very back wall, they have the terrorist ring, the Ten Rings, on the very back wall. And it's the very first allusion to the Mandarin and whatnot, and to the terrorist organization. Very first movie, in the very first, like, 20 minutes of the MCU, actually the modern version, not including the Incredible Hulk movie. So, yeah.
I know what I'm doing today. All right.
There you go. And there's I forgot which one it was. I should have come more prepared. But there's a post-credits scene where it's literally, like, kind of like a 70s exploitation film of the Mandarin, and it's a post-credit scene. Someone help us out here, but it's great. They actually talk with Trevor Slattery. He's in jail and whatnot, and they're getting him to go and do his signature catchphrase, like, you'll never find us, or something along those lines. And bam, there's a scene where literally the whole set breaks open and someone comes in and like nabs him. So it's like one of the best post-credit scenes of any of the MCU movies. So, but love it. Tim, what's your number three?
Worst villain. This kind of goes back to one of the ones you guys discussed. I have Whiplash. So I just didn't feel like he was a very well-developed character. And everything you guys said about him as a sympathetic character, I agree with that. He was very sympathetic. But, I mean, the storyline just didn't hold my interest as well as I would have liked. It was a villain driven by revenge, but yet it's still a guy fighting another guy because their dads had a conflict. So I don't know, you know, it just didn't develop. You got two fighting nerds going against each other in this movie. I mean, he's got some cool toys. He's a pretty smart guy. He's got a weakness for his bird.
Yeah, so he does love his bird.
You know, that's really all you got to do to take him down is, like, you know, pull a knife to the neck of his bird and he's going to crumble. So he just didn't do it for me.
But I'm going to give a special shout out right now, and I'm just going to state this, that if any secondary villain in Iron Man 2, Justin Hammer, Sam Rockwell, is he one of my most favorite characters of all? Every scene he's on, he steals the scene.
He's fun.
He's the best actor in the movie by far. Every time he's on, I'm like, I'm waiting for him. You know, he was the same way in what is the movie? Oh man, I'm drawing a blank now. It's the roadmap for, what is that movie? It's a famous literature novel. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh yeah,
he's in that movie as well too. He steals every scene he's on. So what a talented actor. So
I think the acting part, like, I love Mickey Rourke too in certain roles. He's perfect. He was perfect in The Wrestler. I couldn't understand him half the time. He just mumbled. So that didn't help the situation. So, gotcha. You know, and that's where it goes with, like, not great movies kind of go along with not well developed villains. So
okay, I'm going to go with a weaker villain here, just in terms of storyline, because he really only appears in two movies, and he's easily dispatched in both movies. I'm going to go with Ulysses Klaue. So he ends up getting beat down in two movies back to back, which is just embarrassing for a villain. You know, he gets his arm torn off by Ultron, and then Killmonger beats him after he gets the fake prosthetic arm, the hyper cannon put on his arm. The funny thing is, I actually like his acting. He's got that crazy look in his eye, which actually screams villain. He's got that perfect chin, your facial hair, like he screams villain.
Yeah.
And then he's like easily dispatched. So I've got to go with number three with Ulysses Claw as just not good. So two, Scott, what do you got?
I'm pulling a switch here. I'm moving my number one to number two.
Okay.
Because I have Justin Hammer on there.
Oh, awesome.
Not saying he doesn't do a great job on everything, but just the fact that he's like bumbling and clueless. Like, this is the guy who's leading the Defense Department, and he's a step behind Tony Stark in every single way. And all the stuff he's making doesn't work properly. And, you know, they're making jokes like, you know, is that a hammer design? You know, he's the bad guy, but he's second fiddle. He's not a real strong character. He's got charisma, and he's you know, it's well acted. But I'm just thinking, like, as like the main bad guy, you're like, he's behind the whole time. He's kind of like ridiculous throughout the movie, and it's just I never really, again, I liked his role in there, but as just being like a strong villain, he's not so great at it. And he gets tricked by Vanko anyway, so it's just like everybody's like beating on top of him. He messes up everything he tries to touch.
I will say, though, that I've searched more than once for shirts from, like, TeePublic that says Hammer Tech on it, just because I want to have, you know, I don't know. But I agree with you. He's terrible. I mean, he's terrible. Tim, who's your number two?
I'm going to go with Malekith from The Dark World, the Dark Elf. It's a bad movie, and I mean, not a bad movie. I love all the movies, but it's one of the least likable movies of the whole series. He just is not very memorable. Honestly, you know, I hesitated to put him on the list because I had a hard time recalling exactly what it was he did that I didn't like, and that's kind of why I don't like him. Like, he killed Thor's mom. That's it. That's about all I really remember of Malekith. He just was not a well-developed villain. So I think I just don't have a whole lot to say about him, and that's what makes him weak.
Yeah, and go ahead, Sam.
I agree 100% with Tim. I just want to mention that a couple days ago, we were in a group chat talking about this, and Chris had mentioned Malekith. And to agree with Tim so much, I had to Google who the heck Malekith was again.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah,
just to show how on the money Tim is, I was like, "Who the heck is that again?" I'm like, "Oh, okay, it's Dark Elf. Yeah, I got it too."
So weak, in fact, they had to buoy him with two other villains, the main villain, the Aether. You know what I mean? And then they had to create a destroyer for him to go and do all of his dirty work. So they had to buoy him with two other characters. And like, you would have to research to know that's Christopher Eccleston. That's a famous heavyweight actor. I mean, he's Doctor Who. So right. You would have to really, was it really Christopher Eccleston? And then one of the review sites says, you have this fabulous actor with this unique accent, and instead his communication method is you just talk gibberish. So like you could have put anybody as the villain. Why'd you let this guy be the villain? It could have been anybody as your villain. You gave no credibility to his acting ability as the villain, you know, in the movie. So agreed there. Cool name, though. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah.
At least part of that name. Anyways, I'm going to say Yellow Jacket, Darren Cross from the original Ant-Man. Only because, like, when I watched the movie, I never felt threatened by him. I never felt like his character was ominous enough. Yes, he was greedy. He wanted to show Hank Pym that he was now capable of running the company. And yes, he liquefied a guy, you know, in the bathroom and whatnot. But I never felt even like the character itself was evil enough. So it just lacked for me. I know it was one of the earlier movies in the MCU, and you'll see the progression of characters as they get stronger and the villains as the MCU goes on. But Yellow Jacket, I there was something that made me feel like it was comical rather than ominous. And that's a problem when you're talking about a villain in a movie. So, anyway.
Yeah, he was in my honorable mentions too for this list. It's kind of a storyline that has been done to death. Like, you got a corporate guy who wants to take advantage of somebody else's stuff, and you know he's driven by that, and like he's just weak.
Yeah. What's your number one, buddy?
Number one, I had to go back and actually search for the name because I wasn't even sure.
Uh-oh.
So that shows you how strong I thought they were to begin with. Jan Rog, okay, from Captain Marvel. And if I pronounce that incorrectly, I apologize. But Jan Rog, Captain Marvel, it's the main bad guy. And you feel like there's supposed to be a twist. You know, he's Captain Marvel's friend, but you know right away he's not the good guy. I mean, I didn't feel that there was anything in there that led me to like him or really think that he was going to be the good guy. I mean, you know it right away. And most of his screen time, he's talking on the phone with the main character. There's never any real fighting. There's never like that tension. There's nothing really going on there. He's just like chatting with her, and then he's easily disposed at the end. There was just like no build up to that character. And Captain Marvel was a great movie, but there was no real strong bad guy, and there was nothing really there from him. I thought personally,
Scott, you're right. Jude Law plays the role in the movie, so much so that like you're not even sure really if he is the main villain, because they have to give him like five other characters, including Ronan, the Accuser, as also a potential villain, as well as three other of his henchmen, as well as giving you subterfuge and making you think that actually they might be the heroes. And in fact, I agree with you. And he clearly is the main villain, and he's dispatched with one, you know, blast to the chest, and that's it. So, but he's alive still as well too, though. So he was sent back to the Supreme Intelligence with the message that she's coming to go and destroy him, but he's still alive. So Tim, how about you?
This one is a weak character, but I love this character absolutely.
Because I might have the same character now that you say that, because I have one that's weak, but I love him.
Jeff Goldblum as the Grandmaster.
okay.
I just absolutely love him. That character. He's hilarious.
Yes.
He is the epitome of Jeff Goldblum, but he is nothing in that movie. He's just there, you know, basically he's kind of like an ancient Roman emperor, like, please me, do whatever. Like even the people that are trying to be the bad guys on his behalf, he's kind of like, no, it's, you know, let him talk, you know. It's just, he's fun, but he just is just he's a pushover. You know, at the end, even he shows up and he's like, hey, what's going on? You know, he pops out of the spaceship and he's about to just get swarmed. I don't know if he's alive or dead in there. I assume that he had a bad end from all of the bad guys that were going to go after him, but he's got no power.
So Jeff Goldblum, he is the same character in every movie, no matter what his character is. It's the same character, and he's got such memorable lines. Oh, I'm stepping in it. And, you know, everything he says on the screen just makes you crack up. But he is that character in every movie. But yeah, if you research the MCU, he's a heavy dude. Like, he appears, and he's got these vendettas with, like, the Collector and whatnot. So the Grandmaster is more than Jeff Goldblum's character in Ragnarok. But yeah, agreed. But he's awesome. Isn't it a great character, though? Like, if you had a poster of like the characters you cheer for in the movies, like, he'd be like up there for sure.
Yes.
I'm gonna go with a different one, only because I love the look. I hate the simplicity of how he was dispatched, especially considering the intelligence level. And I'm gonna go with Obadiah Stane from the original Iron Man. And here's why. First off, I mean, Jeff Bridges is, look, the bald guy aging with the beard. Oh, my gosh. Like, I can't grow that kind of facial hair, but if I could, I'd look like Jeff Bridges when I was older, for sure. But, so, what's his motivation? It's greed. It's just greed, right? And so, he's got the entire company working at his disposal. He's got this young punk, Tony Stark, who was kidnapped and yada, 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 and he comes back. You tell me a person in Obadiah Stane's capability level, financial resources, and the fact that he works for a weapons contractor, can't have Tony Stark killed? You can't do that one job right? And then, not to mention, his impending demise is led based upon a design flaw that you didn't realize traveling up to the outward edges of the atmosphere would cause freezing in your suit. This intelligence, this completely intelligent So the fact that he's there, it's too simplistic of a character. You're only driven by greed, you know, and it was fairly obvious when you saw him. As I read later on, if you go back and you even look at a preview, they identify him as the villain in the previews. So before the movie even takes place, you know who the bad guy is. And it's like, what the heck? How did that happen? Because he's masquerade as Tony, my boy, you know, for the first 45 minutes of the movie. But his real life look, I can't do that. And I'm completely jealous because that is a great look on a character. So I'm going to go with Obadiah Stane as my worst villain right there. All right, boys, let's talk about ones who we think, and I think we're all going to agree Thanos should have won, but let's go with villains who should have succeeded or had the motivation to succeed that should have been carried through. So, Scott, you want to you did first last time. Tim, you want to go first here with number three?
All right, I'm going to go with Ultron.
Okay.
So Ultron was from Avengers Age of Ultron. He had the advantage of all of Tony Stark's knowledge and technology. And he had the ability to think for himself. As a technological being, he had the ability to think and make decisions. But he also lacked the inhibiting factor of human emotions. Like, you combine those things together, it should have worked. Like, the only thing that would ever hold back, I mean, Tony Stark was brilliant. All of his tech was top notch. Like, he could have done anything. Ultron had all of that, but didn't have to be hampered by my moral decisions. Like, he could have just done anything he wanted to with that technology, but somehow still didn't.
Gotcha. Scott, does he appear on your list at all?
He does not.
Okay.
Good pick. Good pick, does not.
I'm going to pause you for a second then, because he appears on my list, and I'm going to move him around. He was my number one. Ooh. He was my number one, and I tell you why. Because he had the ability to go in and out of bodies and systems just by using the internet and the universe. So his body was never really that body. He could be anywhere at any time that he wanted to. So there's no physical representation that should have ended him at that point.
And the ability to make multiple copies of himself, too.
Multiple copies of himself. So, exactly. It was voiced by James Spader. So, like, I really enjoyed that, too, as well. And, I mean, seemingly having unlimited power, pulled off a guy's arm in a heartbeat without even trying to pull off his arm. You know, and the ability to go and summon armies of characters, you know, which is, of course, like a villain ploy from, like, eons ago, that instead of having a super strong villain, you just get a super strong force together. But he combined all of that, a super strong force and a villain that, yeah, without pathos, you know, he should have been unstoppable because he really had no physical limitation. He could be anybody and anywhere. So, yeah, agreed. I just argued that at the end, his dramatic plan was to lift up Earth or a city and then drop it back down, where a person should have been smarter than that or could have a way more wicked plan. But he was my number one that he should have won. All right, Scott, you're up.
I'm just outmatched by you two. I have to mention that.
We're dorks.
I was not prepared for this level. My number three, I had Killmonger on there. I said, because he had the empathetic backstory. He made good points about giving the technology that Wakanda had to people who were impoverished. And, you know, you're sitting there, you understood every single thing he said. When it was on the level playing field, he bested T'Challa. He became the Black Panther. He had most of the people in the kingdom behind him and supporting him. And, you know, they just got like mutinied on, where you're going, you know, like, he did everything. He had the backstory. He had good ideas. He had everybody kind of behind him, and he still lost. And, you know, you related to him. And then, as you'd mentioned, it would have been great as if they could have teamed up and done something. But that didn't work out either. You're cheering for him. You thought he had it possibly in the bag. I won't say cheering for him, because you were cheering for, you know, T'Challa as well. But, I mean, there was just a lot behind him. And he could have won. And in theory, he did. He beat him fair and square. And you're going, he should be the king now. That should have been the end of it. And then they switched it on you, and he ended up losing. Yeah.
So much so, Scott, that it might have been a contained, like, two-movie series there where, like Thanos, he wins. And there needs to be a second movie to, you know, explore the opposite side of that, but they combined it into one movie. And I guess it's probably for the best, because now with Chadwick Boseman's unfortunate passing, you know, but agreed. Well, I kind of hogged with Ultron, so back to you, Tim. Give me a number two.
All right, so I'm going to go with Ego, okay, the villain from Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So Ego's a god, so he already has an advantage there, but his plan was to spread his seed throughout, you know, multiple planets, trying to create a half-god offspring so that he could then join forces with them and utilize their combined godlike powers to take over the universe. And everything should have worked. Like, that mission should have worked, but he made one mistake. He let Peter Quill know that he had given his mother cancer. And then, again, as I mentioned before, grief, the most powerful driving force, drove Peter to overpower Ego and to then conquer him. But had he not done that, I see nothing that would have stopped his plan. Like, he should have succeeded with that.
We saw the hesitation in Peter Quill when he destroyed his Walkman, you know, and that made Peter angry. But you're right. It was the moment he said, I had to put the tumor or the cancer in her brain, that's where it started. You're exactly right. So his own, but I agree with you in that sense that mere human beings, mortals, even Peter as a half-breed, it shouldn't have been enough to overtake a planet, you know, and a god. So I agree with you there. Kurt Russell is also amazing. I'm always astounded, boys, at when you watch the Marvel movies. Okay, you associate now as Chris Evans as Captain America and Tony Stark and Chris Hemsworth. But when they bring the villains on and they're Hollywood A-listers, like, they have no problem getting A-listers to be their villains in these movies anymore. Robert Redford, for goodness sakes, is Alexander Pierce. These are like the biggest stars in Hollywood. And you realize at heart, they're all Marvel fans, and they're all kids at a certain point. Mickey Rourke, who is like the bizarrest character in Hollywood, never picked scripts, decided he wanted to be Anton Vanko. Why? Because at one point they were kids, and they must have read comic books, or they must have thought, okay, this is a cool role, you know, so let's explore this side of it. So, you know, but Kurt Russell, always the big Disney connection right there too as well. So, good point. And nod for like one of the best soundtracks, Guardians Part 2. Oh my gosh. The song, I swear at some point in my life, I'm going to have a dog named Brandy, because my kid days are done, but a dog will be called Brandy. One of the greatest soundtracks in the MCU.
Yeah.
Hands down. Scott, I know you're a big Guardians fan.
I do like Guardians. I just went to see it again the other day in the theater. That's probably what you're mentioning as well, that it took the team to go see Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one in the theater. So I do like Guardians, and there is a Guardian on my list.
Okay, go. You're up.
It's not right now, though, because mine will be number one. Right now, I think I'm stuck on him just because I love the character so much, Loki. I mean, again, he's part god, but essentially part frost giant. I mean, he could have and should have won so many different times in so many different movies, and he always gets thwarted. You know, he can change his appearance. There's like so much stuff he can do where you're going, he should easily win here. He's teamed up with, you know, the Chakotay, and, you know, just there's something where it's every so many different movies he's in, and you're just like, are you ever going to win any of them?
Correct.
And it's just, I think a lot of it is also just because I cheer for him just because I love the character so much. I realize I should have worn my Loki shirt today, but I have a Loki's Irish pub shirt.
Nice.
absolutely love Loki. I think he just sentimentally, he made his way on this list, and maybe he shouldn't have, but I put him on here anyway, so you have to deal with it.
Okay, I'm gonna help you out then. Go Thank to you. Disney Springs, go to the Uniqlo store. They mm-hmm. have a certain character section. They have a specific Loki shirt, and my daughter bought it because she loves Loki as well too. And it's, you know, it's unisex, so I mean, it's not feminine or masculine, it's just a Loki shirt. It's a really cool shirt, and Uniqlo is like one of the coolest stores at Disney Springs. They always got awesome stuff there. So but yeah,
I'll no that.
Okay, I'm a little hesitant to say this because you just said something. I'm afraid I'm gonna steal it from you.
That's okay.
My second character,
and you'll say it more eloquently than me anyway, so go ahead.
No, you can help chime in. Maybe it's the same guy. My second character is Ronan the Accuser. And he was like the first villain that I actually thought to myself, that guy is awesome. You know, he was a religious zealot. And the character is Lee Pace. So when you see him on the screen, just the ominous nature of him, and the overwhelming reason why he should have won was he handled the Power Stone in his hand. How many people handle those Infinity Stones? And again, I know we're big dorks talking about Marvel here, but I love talking about it. He literally handles the Power Stone, and then he crams it into his hammer, and he, you know, he obliterates it into his hammer to make, you know, the weapon right there. That alone, to have the mental and physical ability to actually handle an Infinity Stone in your bare hand, that alone makes you succeed. That should have alone made you succeed. Not to mention the intense, like, religious, like, fervor, and the fact that he could take these missile blasts to the chest and appear and whatnot. I don't know if there's another more ominous villain. So in Captain Marvel, when you saw the younger version of Ronan come back, I was like the only guy in the theater going, yes, you know, to see Ronan appear again. And obviously in that movie, he says, we're going to come back for the girl. And the only thing I dislike is to have an ominous character. Of course, in the MCU, there's always a twist at the end. To lose based on a dance-off, which was an epic dance-off. But
I mentioned that. Like, you lose on a dance-off? You've got everything won. You get distracted by a dance-off and you go, wait, what are you doing right now? You know, it's like, seriously? You've had everything. This is ridiculous.
Correct.
Funny. Very funny, but you're like, oh, come on.
When you see characters like Malekith or Ulysses Klaue or Yellowjacket or even Ivan Vanko on a screen, they're characters. When you see Ronan the Accuser on the screen, it's the same feel I got when I see Darth Vader on the screen. Like, oh, something's going to go down now, boys. You know, when you see him on the screen.
It's a presence.
Yes. So it's arguable that he should be number one on my list, but he's not. I'm just going to say it here. So
he fought back Thanos. You know, he sat there, stop calling me boy. And he's like, once he got the stone, he just put Thanos essentially in his place, and Thanos disappeared like off the screen. I'm like, yeah, he stood up to Thanos. I mean, he was not scared of Thanos, and Thanos is
zero.
Amazing.
Yeah. Zero hesitation to go and accuse and say, I'm coming for you now. And it was oh, that's going to be a battle. You know,
I'd say like, man, Ronan is,
I don't want to do. Like, yeah.
Yep.
Okay. That was good. All right. So I probably shouldn't do this. He was almost on my list too, but I felt like, unfortunately, his appearance in Captain Marvel kind of ruined him for me, because he kind of backed down. He saw what Captain Marvel was doing and like, I'm out of here. I'm out. He's going to kill me. So,
but
he saw.
Let me reframe that though, Tim. Maybe because the intelligence level said, I need a new plan. I can't just run through this brick wall because I see she's. You know, and remember, he didn't have the Power Stone at that point. So
that's true. That's a good point.
He was just a religious zealot and fervor, even in Captain Marvel. I need to rethink this plan. So
I forgot the time frame. So that was the younger Ronan. Then
yeah,
so that makes sense. All right.
The physical appearance though of him on screen, it dominates the screen when he shows up. You know something's going to happen when he's there.
Yeah.
So, anyways, number one for you, big guy.
All right. So this. That mean, yeah. All right, so this one's really probably a stab in the dark, and I'm going very nerdy on my definition of this, but bringing somebody back from a previous list, I have Helmut Zemo as my number one villain that should have succeeded.
Okay.
Because he used the most powerful weapon that can be used against human beings themselves. Like, he turned them without practically lifting a finger. He was driven by grief. I keep saying that that's the most powerful driving force. He was driven by grief, and he used truth of how Tony Stark's parents died to turn Iron Man and Captain America against each other, and then forced all the other Avengers to choose sides, leading to Civil War. And his impact, like, wasn't just contained to that movie, to Captain America, Civil War. It impacted throughout the rest of the movies.
Yes.
Like, it technically wasn't resolved until Endgame. So he turned them, and I think that we've seen that throughout history. As a history teacher, you know, empires fall most frequently because of infighting amongst people. That's how you bring people down.
Scott, I'm going to chime in here then. I'm going to cut in front of you, because he was my number two. Remember, Ultron was number one. Helmut Zemo, I couldn't agree more. 10 words to subdivide the greatest force on the planet. 10 words to go and create that force. And the best part is Daniel Brühl is a great actor. In the movie Inglourious Basterds, he plays a role in there. And he's phenomenal in that movie as well, too. And he's still alive. He's just been in prison at this point. And one of his last lines were, I don't know if you remember, but the agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. says, like, just try to go and get on my bad side. And he said something like, you failed. And Helmut Zemo says, but did I? And he just leaves it like that. That's the end line. And, like, you know that based on his age, physically in Hollywood, he's a younger character, so he has time to return. And based on, like, his impact, you're right. Zero superpowers. Zero ability to control the situation. Yet the hatred and the rage he had and the ability to outthink and turn men against men, he should have succeeded. And I'd arguable to say it's a possibility you do see him succeed later on. So was my number two, but I agree with you completely. I'm gonna say him as well. Scott, last one. Finish us off, buddy.
I was Ronan.
Ronan.
I was Ronan. Ronan was my number one. I had Killmonger, then Loki. Ronan was my one.
Gotcha. So you say that because you feel like on screen he dominated, or the Power Stone, or what was your motivation for number one?
Well, I mean, it was everything that you had said and I mentioned previously is that, you know, he was dominating the whole thing. He had everything in his hands. He stood up to Thanos. I mean, everything was done, and they killed him off so quickly. It made him look silly with the dance off and just got distracted. But I mean, he had already dominated everything. I mean, he had, I'm trying to think exactly. So he had taken out the entire army of the
Sandarians,
yes, thank you. The Sandarians, man, so many different things. He'd taken out all of them. I mean, everything. I mean, he had it won. I mean, everything was completely done. He had the stone. He was the most powerful. He'd taken out the Sandarians. He was done, and all it was ready to wipe out everybody. And then he got challenged to a dance off, and that distracted him, and that was the end of it. I'm like, I mean, there's anybody who should have won. I'm like, he was right there, and then the way that they made him lose was almost pitiful. I mean, again, it was funny. I loved the movie. It was funny seeing with the dance off and everything, but to sit there and say, you know, you had everything done, you had annihilated everyone. I mean, you won. I mean, it's game over. And then to say for the distraction, gotcha. You just like, it was just too much pulling the rug out from under you. I mean, he should have succeeded. He had succeeded. It was over. And then gone. Yeah.
Gotcha. I agree with you 100% in that. The best part about these villains that we talk about is for a movie to succeed, you really have to believe in the character. You have to, I mean, the movie's success or failure is dependent upon, you know, the accuracy or the ominous nature of a person. And you're right, you can see the ones that we said were our weakest villains. Yellow Jacket for me, you know, I liked Ant-Man. I didn't love Ant-Man. Luis was the best part of Ant-Man to me, you know. So it really determines. You get Thanos in the movie, and all of a sudden, I'm all ears and eyes, Infinity War. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, the character's development is what makes the movie for us. We debated talking about characters that are good in nature but that have villainous ways, but then I started doing some research, and that list got really fast, really quickly. Person could say Iron Man from Civil War, Captain America from Civil War, Bucky, the Hulk, and Ragnarok, because poor Doug is sitting there dead. Lord knows that the Incredible Hulk killed more than that as the champion. You realize the lines of good and evil in even these Marvel movies, they get blurred really, really quickly. You know, the whole point of Civil War was everyone needed to put they needed some more restrictions. And you're like, no, they're the defenders of the planet. And then you realize the massive devastation in New York City they caused based upon the, you know, it'll never be resolved. Yeah. The lines of good and bad are so easily blurred in the Marvel Cinematic Universe that's a show for some other day. We simply can't get into that one today. Yeah. There's too much.
Especially when you get to the Guardians. Like, That's really complicates it. So
exactly.
Yep.
Okay. So I think what we've done today is absolutely amuse ourselves with our villains, and it just shows that, you know, 10 years ago, I might go so far as to say, is 10 years ago, the Marvel Cinematic Universe wasn't a thing, right? Star Wars was out, and Star Wars was at the center of every young man and young woman's heart that grew up in the 70s and 80s. It was Star Wars. Then all of a sudden, this new kid shows up on the block, and they put these A-quality actors in the roles and these A-quality writers, and they fully fledge out Stan Lee's storylines from back from the 60s and 50s and 70s. And you realize it's an ace. It's a hit. The only thing that makes me sad in this whole thing is the fact that there's still that Universal Disney, you know, line that's drawn in the sand where Universal owns some of the characters' rights, and Disney can put in the new characters, hence the Guardians mission breakout and the Guardians, you know, roller coaster coming. The fact that they can't all be contained. I know there's a Marvel Universe showing up over at California, you know, but I sure love to see further development of those in the parks. That would make me so happy to see those characters there. So,
yeah.
Anything left, boys, to say? Let's go do some villainous acts today, right? Let's go. Let's put out our Infinity Glove, right?
That was fun. This is a lot of fun. I can't wait. Hopefully, we get to do something on Heroes.
They're boring, Tim. I don't like those Heroes. Are you kidding me?
I've learned that if we do this again, and if I'm ever invited back to do this again, I have to come more prepared because I know that Tim is going to bring it and you're going to bring it. So I need to do more research. I'm going to have to start watching every movie. I mean, I've got to come more prepared than this because you guys know your stuff.
Scott, you know what? By osmosis, literally sitting in the car, just having the movies play upon me as we're driving. I got to ask you this one question, though. This is the last thing. We're going long here. I apologize. Civil War. Are you team captain or team
always
Iron Man? I know you're a Captain America fan, but look at the lineups, though. Those are some pretty intense lineups. You know, on Iron Man's team, you got Spider-Man, you got Vision, you've got who's on the team?
Black Panther.
Black Panther's on the team. Scarlett Johansson. Black Widow. You've got an impressive lineup. You've got Rhodey. You know, you've got why am I drawing a blank on his name? Tim, help me out here.
Iron Patriot.
Exactly. That's an impressive lineup. Captain America's got him, Bucky, you know, the Falcon, Winter Falcon there.
Ant-Man.
I get it. So you're a team capped at this point, Scott?
I'm always team capped.
Scott, Tim, who are you on? What team?
I'm a team cap too, and it really came back to that whole like empathy with Winter Soldier. Like I felt like Iron Man was almost the villainous person in that situation, so I had to go team cap.
Well, you're both wrong. That's okay. I'll forgive you guys, but team Iron Man. So here's my only fear. Some of these characters in Hollywood age, they're moving on in age. You know, that's my only fear with some of these action stars. You know, I tend to lose interest in guys like Arnold Schwarzenegger and Dolph Lundgren and Sylvester Stallone as they got up into the 60s and still as action stars. Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr., he's approaching that deadline too, guys. So that's my only concern. Obviously, he's out of the MCU with air quotes right now. I use air quotes. So, but that's my only concern. Anyways. All right. For my boys, Tim and Scott, we appreciate that. If we said anything today that's incorrect or you don't agree with us or you do agree with us, find us in our Facebook group. It's called EDCOT, E-D-C-O-T, and you can join us there. We're all there. You know, you can also find Scott buy and sell DVC.com. Scott's the owner of a DVC resale and rental company. And Tim is profusely infused with historical knowledge, being a teacher, way more than I have. I'm just a talking fool with a microphone. So I just try to pretend and keep up with these boys. So
it's all smoke and mirrors. I just, you know.
Find us all in EDCOT. We appreciate that. And
has all complaints to Stacey Nyman, our fact checker on everything Marvel. So
yeah, exactly. Stacey right now has said, I don't even know these characters. Your name, you guys are nerds. Anyways, we hope we enjoyed listening today. We hope we actually brought back some of your fondest villainous memories of the Marvel Cinematic University. And for listening, we appreciate it. Have a great day, everybody.
Bye.